News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807, Mobile Mornings on a Tuesday, which means it's Quinn Hillier Day from QuinnHillier.com, and it's also NOLA and the Advocate and the newspapers in New Orleans. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing just fine, and plenty to talk about with you this morning. Why don't we start with the big announcement last week and kind of a lead-in to the I-10 Mobile River Bridge LDOT announcement. We had a co-op-ed. You don't see those very often, but both sitting senators for Alabama, Katie Britt and Tommy Tuberville, coming together to write an op-ed about how much the president, Trump, is helping get this bridge project across the starting line. And it was a really odd op-ed. Didn't really understand the point at that time, and a lot of Trump love in it for something that hasn't even begun yet. But then the next day we found out why they put that out there, because LDOT coming out and saying, all right, here's the plan, here's when we hope to break ground, and here's how much the tolls will cost.
This has the fingerprints of Katie Britt all over it, and credit to her. My very, very, very educated guess that it has her fingerprints all over it supports the other point that I want to make today, and that I make all the time, which is that being a senator or a representative involves a lot more than just getting up there and voting right. Anybody that wants to go, that wants to elect somebody just because, oh, they're going to vote right, you don't know what you're doing, because voting right is like one-fourth of the job. Actually getting to understand how the government works, how to work the levers of government, and how to work with the other people in your orbit is much more important than just knowing how to vote. And all that leads back to the bridge.
Yeah.
I moved here in 1998. They already had been a draft EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, that was just about complete when I moved here in 1998, 28 years ago. Think about how long that is. Usually, once you get an EIS, then you get people protest about little things, and you fix it at the margins, and you move ahead. And once you get the EIS, you're maybe usually about 4 years from actually starting something. Here we are, 28 years later. It took Bradley Byrne starting in 2013 to rejuvenate the project that had been in the intervening 15 years completely. It just had basically hit a standstill. And then it took Katie Britt getting up there and working it and working it and working it. And here are the three things that the op-ed said that they did, which is actual legislative work other than just casting votes. First, they got this new thing that's an interstate system reconstruction and rehabilitation pilot program.
Mm-hmm.
They said, okay, so they dig around in the laws, in the transportation appropriations and the transportation authorization bills, and they figured, do we have some sort of leeway to create a new pilot program within it? Okay, here's what the law says. Here's what we can do. We go and present it to the top bureaucrats at the transportation department. We get them to sign off on it. We go to the president. We we butter him up like Katie Britt has done a great job of, sometimes to my displeasure, but she's done a great job of befriending the president. And you get him to sign off on it. And that creates something that gets around the ordinary bureaucratic landmark obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, okay, now we're going to move this to the front of the line with this pilot program. Second, he's clearing mounds of red tape surrounding the previously awarded grant. So Katie Britt's old boss, Shelby, one of the last things he did, and it wasn't entirely him, but he had a big hand in getting a $550 million bridge investment program grant. But it still has lots of red tape. So she goes in, her staff goes in, and they figure out how to clear all the red tape, what would need to be done. And they present that to the president's team with the, here's the legal authority for you to cut this red tape. And then third, President Trump is cutting unnecessary bureaucratic requirements and commitments from the project scope, creating hundreds of millions of dollars in cost savings. Again, that all sounds bureaucratese, but guess what? That bureaucratese is the difference between a program sitting there, a project sitting there for 28 years now, and a project that actually can break ground at the end of the year.
We hope, right? We hope.
We hope.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is a huge deal. You know, you've heard me for years and years and years talk about how important this bridge is, and this is now finally getting something done. And there hasn't been a single vote cast, not a single vote cast. So that's why when you get to the next topic, saying, "Oh, well, you put Lindsey Graham's sister in because she'll vote the way Lindsey does," that doesn't cut it. You got to actually know what you're doing. Katie Britt knows what she's doing because she was there as a chief of staff, and she has the personal skills. So let me get off my soapbox, but other than to say, whoever and whatever caused this, if it turns out to be true, it is absolutely great news for the entire area and for the entire Gulf South, including residents of Florida, of Georgia, of Alabama, of Mississippi, of Louisiana, and of Texas.
But the project was not delivered in a way that we expected, because now you've got this, you've got two phases. You've got the bridge construction, and then you're going to restripe the bayway. And then at some point, phase two, there's no understanding of when phase two kicks in. Then you attack the bayway. It was always presented in a way that it was one project, that the bridge and the bayway. I don't remember discussions where the two were, obviously they were two separate projects, but they were going to be done simultaneously at the same time, was always my understanding. Quinn, what was yours?
My understanding was the same as yours, but I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, look, the absolute essential part of this, the first essential part of this is the bridge, because the problem, the biggest problem, is the backup at the tunnel, at both tunnels, as everybody knows. The slowdowns, the accidents, et cetera, et cetera. You get the bridge over there, while still keeping the tunnels open, by the way, is an option, and you eliminate one of the major causes of the bottlenecks, and also, therefore, make things a heck of a lot safer, not just more timely, but safer. And, yeah, you do need to expand the bayway, because, you know, you've got, what, four or five lanes coming in from the west, and once you get over the bay, you got three lanes. So the bayway should be three lanes, and yeah, you got to do that. But look, if they got to break it down into pieces to get the bridge done first, I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you make of the tolls? We knew, or had a really strong feeling, I did anyway, that the tolls would go up from their initial projection, which, and it wasn't as much a projection as the MPOs said, this is the price, we're not going to go any higher than that, and they ended up going higher, but not by much.
So
$3, $3 each trip with the Algo Pass, $7.70 without the pass, or if you're a frequent flyer on the Bayway, you get that $60 unlimited monthly option, which was up from $40. I don't know if I've gotten your straight take on tolling an interstate project like this. Just what are your overall thoughts on the tolls?
Well, I've always said that unlike local projects where I am fully in favor of tolls, I mean, people got to pay for the roads that they use. I have always been against tolls on interstate highways, and in theory, you know, you shouldn't have tolls on them. It doesn't serve one state. It serves the whole country. The taxpayers are paying for it already. I don't think there should be tolls.
Yeah.
But that said, if that's what it takes to get this project off the ground, and you know they're not doing the $7 tolls, which is what Kay Ivey was talking about eight years ago when she had a conniption fit and shut the whole project down for a couple of years because they wouldn't do her $7 tolls. Look, this is less than half than that, and it's not ideal, but it's better than nothing.
Well, and you know. Our area down here, it's almost like a mentally abusive situation we have with ALDOT and the federal government on this, which I guess
isn't
the state government, which that's ALDOT, but which isn't much different from really dealing with any government body for the most part. Again, we're on this high now because, okay, now the project's coming. They've said it. The tolls have gone up a little bit, but at least they're ready to start. And, you know, sorry, but I still don't know if this is actually going to begin when they hope that it'll begin. And I wonder, too, it's great news that they were able to cut so much of this bureaucratic red tape. I mean, the Overwatch station or whatever that was they're talking about, that they would have to have someone on site, I guess, watching the bridge. I don't know exactly how that would work, but they scratched that out of the plan. The biking and pedestrian path, no longer necessary. That's out. But also a lot of the environmental stuff, too. And I could totally see this getting held up in court with some lawsuits.
Well, that's true. I mean, you there can always be lawsuits. And you got people, you know, going to court for ridiculous reasons all the time. And that's a very good point. Am I right? Because I might have missed this. They're still keeping to the promise not to put tolls on the two existing tunnels.
They aren't, yeah, yes.
Okay, so you've got an option to not use the bridge and therefore not pay the tolls, so it's sort of the best of both worlds. Now, granted, to get back to your earlier point, when you've got all three different ways of getting over there, you do also need to eventually, sooner rather than later, expand the actual ability of people to cross the Bayway and the Causeway. You've got to make a third lane on the Bayway each way, et cetera, because otherwise you just create a bottleneck there. But, look, no tolls as an option, the bridge getting built fast, assuming we don't have any lawsuits. Again, this is progress, and it is progress because of legislative skill that is more than just creating a bill. It's legislative skill getting into the legislation and digging around and figuring out how to make the current legislation work.
So you talk about this skill that Katie Britt has gotten, and it's kind of impressive since she's only been up there for a handful of years. That she's already got she's got a very good a pretty good friendship with Trump at this point.
Very good.
And yeah. So you have somebody who is showing her skill as someone representing the state of Alabama, and thank goodness we have somebody that's got some sort of understanding of this area, because I really think there's powerful politicians in this state that have just no clue what this project was all about, you know, 3 or 4 years ago anyway. So you have Katie doing what she can, but at the same time, to me, it doesn't feel like a pop the champagne.
That is... Especially after 28 years of starts and stops and of being promised, and now it's finally there. You're absolutely right to not want to pop the champagne.
Yep.
You're right to have some suspicions. But to the point, it's not just like Katie Britt got there and suddenly had this skill. No, this is a skill that she learned when she was press secretary,
mm-hmm.
and then when she was chief of staff for the Appropriations Committee chairman in the Senate, a very powerful member, and you get up there and you learn, and then you've also got to have the right people skills, which she does. so it's not just like this comes down from Mount Olympus and
I got it.
You've got the skills.
I got
well,
I'm sure she learned a thing or two from Senator Lindsey Graham, who is great at that sort of thing as well. And when we get back, I want to talk about his life and what's next as we continue with Quinn Hillier on the other side of this break. You're listening to Mobile Mornings. If you want to get in on the text line, 251-343-0106, that's the way.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Trying to do the math here. Quinn Hillier with Dan and Dalton, quinnhillier.com. You were in Washington, D.C. when Lindsey Graham first became a member of Congress. Is that right?
Yes, I was. So I'd gotten there at the end of 91, and then what's known as the Gingrich Congress got elected in 94, when we got 52 new Republican congressmen, or actually a net gain of 52, and Republicans took the majority for the first time in 40 years, and my boss was already fairly high up in the ranks when that happened. So I saw Lindsey Graham come in from his first day, and it was immediately apparent that he was one of the smarter, more savvy members of that freshman class, some of which were really good and some of which, to be frank, were chuckleheads. He was not a chucklehead, and I had very high hopes for him, and in some ways he lived up to my hopes, but in some ways, and I don't want to spend too much time speaking ill of the recently dead, in some ways he was a disappointment. I'll just leave it at that for now. We can talk about
His
strengths and weaknesses for later. But what I did see and what has kept him afloat as a very key player for 32 years is he loved his country, he loved his job, and he was very, very smart and very hardworking, and he was a patriot. So I'll give him all of that.
Yeah, and by all accounts, he wasn't going to leave office an incredibly wealthy man like so many people that go to D.C., and like so many presumed, he was making a little extra cash with some of his things that he was wanting to do overseas, but I guess that wasn't necessarily the case. And like I was saying yesterday, you know, love him or hate him, he was an incredible politician, working inside the government, working people that are sitting senators just like him, or working constituents and getting them to come off a little money for fundraising or vote for him or vote for someone else. I think this is a major, at the very least, short-term loss for the Republican Senate.
Oh, it's definitely a short-term loss. And let me get back to the point I was making when I was talking about Katie Britt. I am not at all a fan of this idea of, which is now not an idea, it's a reality, that they appointed his sister to replace him, saying, oh, well, she's his sister and she'll vote the way he votes. She has zero relevant experience. And I'm not saying all relevant experience means you have to have been a staffer like Katie Britt was or something, but she has, other than making speeches for him, zero background in anything applicable to what a U.S. senator does, which means all she's going to do is get up there and listen to some staff and be bullied by the leadership and vote however she's told.
Well, that's more than Mitch McConnell's doing right now.
No. Well, that's a cheap shot. Look,
it's true.
Well,
he's sitting in a hospital.
He's in the hospital. Anyway, the point is, they've got lots of better options than they should have chosen. People who can actually do the job.
After 31 years in Congress, Graham ranked 294th in wealth among the 535 voting members, and he's up there, again, 31 years. So he's in the middle of the pack. Quinn, thanks for your time.
I think I upset him there.
8:30. Okay.
Quinn Hillier.
There you go.
Thanks, Quinn. I thought it was a good segment. We'll get to your text on the way next.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Yeah, 8:35 now. Hey, coming up around 8:45, we're going to have a conversation with Ron Olmsted from Alta Point about the work they're doing to support veterans throughout our community. He is the Veteran Program Director, so we'll talk with him here in about 10 minutes or so. But first, I want to head on over to the brand-new Capital Tractor location. and talk with Scooter Greenhill. Hey, Scooter, good morning.
Good morning.
So, man, talk about a busy week. You have one ahead of you, and it's always busy at Capital because you have folks coming in for service or coming in to buy some equipment, but the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo coming up this weekend, and Capital Tractor is a presence there, but you especially, you're JC, so you got some hard work ahead of you.
Yes, sir. I'll be there pretty much through tomorrow evening, through Sunday evening. The Capital will be set up there. We'll be there for the Liars Contest, and we'll have some equipment set up. We'll have tractor package deals there, and a couple guys there. We'll be there with the company from at least Thursday when the Liars Contest opens until Sunday.
Man, that is awesome. So a great great chance for folks to come by and check out what you have and talk with you guys while having an absolute blast. Meanwhile, at your news store there behind the VA hospital, you can see it from I-10. I talked about seeing that beautiful Kubota orange while you're driving down the interstate, but it's just behind the VA there. And the summer mower sell-off continues. You guys have discounts up to $2,000 there at Capital Tractor.
That's right. Everything from the 700 series down to the 200 series, the discounts vary, but on that 700 series, we've got up to $2,000 off on select models. Man. If you're looking to upgrade some landscape equipment, now would be a great time to do it.
It seriously would be. Also, talk some about the subcompact and compact utility tractors. I know those are really popular right now, and that's great because you guys are well-stocked.
We are well stocked, and it's hot right now. We're talking about the fishing rodeo, but we're only a couple months out from getting ready for deer season, mm-hmm. and those compact tractors sure come in handy getting food plots ready in the fall.
No doubt about
it. We've got packing deals ready to roll, already sitting on trailers.
That's awesome. Make it easy for the customer. And what about package deals? What kind of package deals are available right now for customers?
We've got the 2502 DT and the 2502 Hydrostats. Most of the packages, the base package has a box blade and a bush hog and a trailer, but we can customize just about any package deal you could imagine for just about any customer's needs.
That's perfect. So if you haven't had a chance to check out the new store, you need to. It's absolutely beautiful. Plenty of land there. You can see where they have the tractors stocked, and then that service department in the back, they take care of business too. Hey, appreciate your time this morning, Scooter.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Scooter Greenhill with Capital Tractor. Visit that new Tillman's Corner location, 4894 Fellowship Drive, again behind the VA hospital, or learn more at capitaltractor.com.
On the text line, 251-343-0106, Angry Patriot says, I just want to point out that the usage life of bridges are between 50 and 100 years, and we are near the 50-year mark now. The bridge is old. The tunnels are old. We need to be thinking about ahead and plan for replacements. Does a catastrophe have to happen to plan smarter? And he says he's ready for us to build a new 8-lane bridge.
Yeah. Let's see. Will they break ground by the end of this year?
Will they?
I don't think so. Mm. That's my opinion.
Wow.
But it's an educated opinion, so it's not like those aren't high odds.
No, you've got a lot of data that support that, years of data. And there's only 5 months left in the year, right?
Mm-hmm. So get to work. I was in full agreement with Quinn for a lot of that conversation.
And not at the end.
At the end, he started saying, you know, how bad of an idea it was to appoint Lindsey Graham's sister, which, you know, maybe it is.
I think it was a longer term, I would think. I mean, she's just going to be there for 3 months.
And if you appoint someone who's running, then you're showing favorability.
You are.
And people will complain about that.
Right.
And my main point, not to actually take a cheap shot at Mitch McConnell, I can do that when Quinn's not on the phone, but there are members of Congress and members of the Senate who are currently not working. That's all the point I was trying to make.
Yeah.
So you can complain all you want about what Lindsey Graham's sister is going to do or not going to do. She's going to do more than Mitch McConnell's doing right now.
She's going to vote.
And texter says that was not a cheap shot, just talking about his absence.
I was really surprised you got that angry.
Even Quinn's sister would make a better politician than what we currently have. Jason says, Dalton, excellent comment about McConnell. Even better if it ticked off Quinn. I mean, we have members of Congress taking months off at a time. Some of them, remember the nursing home thing, didn't even know where that congresswoman was for so long. But whatever. Another texter. I often find myself just wanting to give Dalton a hug for saying exactly what I'm thinking. Well, that is a kind sentiment. I'm not much of a hugger, though. I'll say that. Maybe we'll dap each other up.
I'll tell you what, Dalton's a very cold individual. It's not going to be easy to thaw him all the way down to a hug. Best of luck with that.
No, I hug maybe four people in my life.
Yeah.
And that's with real hesitancy.
Not a warm human being.
Good morning, guys. Dalton, I sure enjoy it when you poke at Quinn. Again, it wasn't meant to be that much of a poke.
No, I was right here.
It was a point, not a poke, a point.
And I was here, and Dalton was as surprised as I was that Quinn kind of lost his composure and just hung up on us, which I was like, did he hang? You know, I was confused trying to figure out, did he just hang up?
Yeah, it was a cheap shot. Quinn, like 99% of the Beltway, thinks you must have experience to function properly in D.C. Yeah, there's some of that, too. It's just because what's Lindsay's sister's name again? Darlene? I tell you, she knows a whole of a lot more about D.C. than I do. Her brother is Lindsey Graham.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think she's learned a thing or two from him over the years?
And, of course, Lindsey Graham had a sister named Darlene.
Darlene.
Of course.
Yeah, and McMaster, what a governor there, bringing her on.
Uh-huh.
Let's be honest, what they will have to do is a groundbreaking ceremony before the end of the year, not actually start on the bridge. You're probably right on that, and we'll probably get an announcement about the first act once the bridge is, like, who's going to open the bridge as the first concert. I don't know, like we saw with the arena yesterday.
And, by the way, that's to be clear, that's not the first act. That's
right,
among the first. And is Trump coming down? Because his name was floated out there for no good reason.
For the groundbreaking.
Might be happening. And then will there be a sighting of Trump at Debris or Winston's downtown?
I'd like to see him start.
I want to know.
Maybe he'll start restriping the Bayway.
Yeah.
By him, like he'll be out there.
Yeah.
And put on the yellow, painting the stripes.
Put on the yellow helmet and go.
That's too much. Philip says, I'm a hug, Dalton. You're going to have to catch me first, Philip, and put this on repeat, best of show. I don't know. I don't know if it's been that good of a show. But we have covered a lot of ground today.
We have. And we're going to cover more ground, too, with a special guest from Alta Point. This is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, Ron Olmsted, who I hadn't yet met personally, and I finally got the chance to. I'm looking forward to having a conversation with him coming up here next, me and Dan. And we're going to talk about what Alta Point is doing in the veterans community.
Yep.
And it's worth
pretty
listening
impressive.
To. I'm looking forward to finding out myself. So Olmsted on to talk about, you know, the challenges that veterans are facing that extend well beyond their military service. And we all know too well about that. Mental health needs, housing instability, difficulty connecting with available resources. Ron Olmsted, Veteran Program Director and Homeless Outreach Specialist with Alta Point Health, joins us next.
He tries to do all of that. Pretty impressive. That's on the way. It's 8:43. Dan and Dalton in Mobile Mornings.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, and good to have you along. That text line 251-343-0106.
And a pleasure to bring into our studios this morning, veteran peer specialist with Alta Point Health, Ron Olmsted, joining us. And man, we've already had a great discussion there during the break, but Ron, thank you so much for coming in today.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Let's start with your own veteran background, your military background. 29 years in the Navy, huh?
Yes, sir. I did 29 years. My 18th birthday was my first day in boot camp. More of a coincidence than a plan. However, no regrets. I signed up for 4 years and I did 25 extra.
That's, I was going to say, the 29-year coincidence is hard to come by. So
yeah,
that's
That was never the intention going into it. However, it just worked out great. No regrets. I look back on a fantastic career. It was awesome.
Well, thank you for your service.
Yeah, and you were telling us about your young family. Very excited for you there. But, you know, you didn't stop serving. You're still serving and really helping so many people in our area, but we're focused today specifically on veterans and what you're doing in that arena. And just tell us, and I know you come face to face, and we have such a big veteran community here along the Gulf Coast. So many of our listeners are veterans. Mm-hmm. We talk about it every single day. What are some of the unique challenges that you're seeing veterans facing out there right now?
So I think when you look at the challenges that the veteran population face, a lot of it has to do with the fact that the job itself is challenging. You're uprooted from your community a lot of times at a very young age. There's not an integrated support network other than your brothers and sisters that you're serving with.
Yep.
And some of the leadership that you're dealing with. You move every 3 years, so you often lack a sense of community. You don't get to put roots down anywhere. And so by the time you retire, you've been kind of drifting, you know, a little bit. It's great. It's rewarding. It's fun. But I think those are unique to the military profession. And then there's the job itself. Having to leave your family for a year at a time, multiple times. Often it's, combat operations have been going on in Iraq and Afghanistan for a long time now. So the generation that we're dealing with, these are all men and women who've seen and done things that, you know, most humans aren't supposed to see and do, I think. So the challenges compound, and they're very unique, and they're very difficult to describe and explain to the average civilian who may have a challenging job, but they still get to go home every day to their family. You may not see your wife and kids or your husband and kids for, 12 to 18 months at a time, multiple times, and it adds up. It takes its toll on a person.
Go ahead, Tom.
And I was just going to say, when someone returns from their service overseas, and you mentioned, they leave their families to go overseas or go to serve, but there's another family on that other end. And then when they come back to regular civilian life or continue their service here on the mainland, then it's like they've lost another family, their family members that were serving alongside them, and seeing so many of the emotional difficulties that some of their brothers and sisters had that were over there with them, that has to weigh on many of them as well when they get back here. And they're suffering through problems of their own, too, often.
That's right. The transition's harder than you would think. Coming home to the free world and your family and your comfort zone, it's harder than you would think. And I think that might be where the first step of the mental health stigma in the military, which shows itself, is when you come back, there may be advertised services, but you're afraid to take advantage of them because you're afraid to ask for help. You're afraid to say, hey, I don't feel right. I may need to talk to somebody. You don't know what that's going to do to your career. There's mm-hmm. a lot of misconceptions mm-hmm. that, I won't be able to carry a weapon anymore, and I won't be able to do the job I'm doing and things like that. So when they transition back, they're coming home. And for the veterans, for the men and women who do need the help and want the help, a lot of them are afraid to ask for the help.
What is the mental health support like in the military itself?
It's getting better, without a doubt. The VA system is amazing. Contrary to popular belief, a lot of your old timers think that the VA is a waste of time. The VA is incredible. Active duty service members now have access to services that my generation, didn't have access to. Mm-hmm. They're starting to have embedded mental health teams with pre- and post-deployment units. So the military has recognized, hey, the suicide rate way too high, the alcohol and substance abuse rates way too high, and they clearly are doing what they can, but the problem manifests way faster than the solution ever can. It's a slow-moving machine, but again, I think your biggest problem is not the resources. The biggest problem is the mentality of the soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines who are like, well, I just can't tell my supervisor that I'm having these issues. Mm-hmm. They don't think it's okay to ask for help, and that's sad. It really needs to be okay to ask for help.
And you were telling us during the break kind of the way that you and the team at AltaPoint are going about this and others trying to help veterans, and in line with that, where it's not like you can just make a post online and they come to you in flock saying, hey, you're right, man, I'm dealing with some things, I could really use some help. You're actively going out and trying to meet some men and women who might be going through a lot of these situations and telling them, hey, it might not be exactly what you think, going out and getting a little bit of help.
That's right. We're trying to put a spin on the mental health, especially with the veterans, that we're all in the same boat. I was you. I was the yeah. person. I was the person who needed help and was yeah. afraid to ask for help. And I owed it to myself. Service to country is something to be proud of, but service to self is also something to be very, cognizant of. And so we do. We set up at events and functions. We're trying to get in bed with American Legions and VFW posts to let them know that we're not trying to sell you anything other than well-being. And if you've got some guys that you think can benefit from our services or from our team, and we can connect them to mental health treatment at any level or substance abuse treatment, then let us have a shot. Let us help this person. Let us be a friend. That's really what we're trying to do, is just to be a peer, a mentor, and a friend.
You're on the streets recruiting, basically, but you're finding some rejecting the idea of any help. But even when you offer it to them, you've got that problem to deal with, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's one of the biggest challenges when we started our veteran services team, our outreach team, and it probably still is the biggest challenge, is to just get in the door, to allow people to open their doors to us with an open mind to say, all right, this guy and his team, they're here only to do good and only to do good by veterans. Like even the VFWs, we personally drove to every VFW post in Mobile and Baldwin County. And we didn't get a very welcoming response.
Wow.
And I think there's trepidation because maybe they thought we were trying to push a product or we were trying to do something.
Meet a quota.
Right. We had an ulterior motive. I mean, nobody pays for anything that I offer. And it's literally, if you're shutting the door on us, you're shutting the door on a lot of opportunities because we can connect them not only to the mental health and substance abuse, but we're trying to connect them to their VA benefits, whether it's medical or compensation. We're doing DD-214 upgrades for people. We're trying to help homeless veterans get housed. We're trying to find jobs for these guys and gals. You know, we're network working with everybody in town to provide more services than originally advertised. And I just really would like to let the whole community know that, you know, if you serve in an area or you deal with a large veteran population, please reach out to us. We would be more than happy to come and pitch the product to you.
Yeah, we're talking with veteran peer specialist with AltaPoint Health, Ron Olmsted. And I can tell just from the short time we've been talking with you here, your heart is in a really, really good place. And you're really doing as much as you can to serve. I don't think that you would want this job if it weren't for that.
This job is kind of like made for him.
It does. Yeah, exactly. But we may be kind of beating around the bush here a little bit, not really because we talk about this so often on our show here, but mental health issues in veterans, kind of what are the common ones you see there? And then let's talk about the suicide rate. And that's been such a major discussion point over the years. You talk about the 22 push-ups a day or 22 an hour or all of these different, you know, things that people are trying to do to bring awareness that is still a major issue for those who return from their service overseas.
It is. So people that don't want to talk openly about the suicide in the military they're just kicking the can down the road. That's all they're doing because it's not going to go away if you ignore it. And so suicide rates are about 1.5 times higher for a veteran population than they are in the country in general, and 2.5 times higher for female veterans. For a lot of different reasons. There's a lot of things that they deal with that are specific to them that they come home to or from. And again, they don't know where to turn. Older veterans are very susceptible to suicide rates as well, because a lot of times they transition after a 20-plus year career. They may be living in a rural part of the country. They're not directly connected to the community anymore, so they don't have their veteran buddies anymore. They don't have their sense of purpose, their job.
They don't have support.
They don't have the support network that most of us would rely on a daily basis. The stigma behind the VA, if you rewind the tape 15 years ago, the VA was a horrible, evil empire that was not taking care of people, and they still live in that world. They still live in that mentality. I'm not going to the VA. They're terrible, which is not true. The VA is amazing. So those are the people we want to reach out to, though. We want to reach out to those folks and say, hey, come be a part of our network. Come be a part of our social support team. We'll help you. We'll plug you in.
How do they get a hold of you? What's the best way for a veteran right now or somebody that knows a veteran that is in need of your services? What now?
Right. So the number one thing I would recommend you do is either call AltaPoint's Access to Care line at 251-450-2211 and ask to be connected to somebody with the veteran services. Or you can call the Crisis Center at 662-8000. And you can, again, ask for the Veteran Services team. Ask for Ron Olmsted specifically. That doesn't matter. I will gladly take your call. We do a online support group every Wednesday where it's led by veterans, for veterans. It's confidential. You don't have to give us your name or anything. And all we do is we talk about wellness stuff, how to deal with what we're all dealing with. We would love to have any veteran who's just wanting to be a part of something bigger to join us on that. And I will say that to the community, you know, if you're a neighbor, a mom, an aunt, an uncle, a grandfather of a veteran, a friend, and you know this person could just use another friend or could use some help or could use a talk, that's the person to refer us to. Mm-hmm. Get us that individual before he becomes, he or she gets to be in crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of times that's the phone call we don't want to take.
Would you say in some cases, and this is such a difficult subject, especially for someone who's so close to someone who may be going through exactly that, but through your years of training and the team there at Alta Point, there may be good ways to kind of approach that with a veteran, approach discussing their mental health and maybe some other issues they're going through. For someone who's concerned about how they may be reaching out to their loved one, sometimes that might be the better move, is to get a professional to give you some help.
This is true, and a lot of times we do speak to the family members. Oftentimes, when we're at events, it'll be a family member who will come talk to us, not so much on behalf of their veteran loved one, but just on the behalf of their own curiosity. What mm-hmm. what can I do? Mm. Because they don't know either. They don't have the tools in their toolbox to deal with some of the issues that their family is struggling with. But, you know, as long as they are capable of either reaching out to us or breaking the ice with that person and saying, hey, I talked to a guy, or hey, you know, I heard something on the radio today, or I saw a flyer that might be really neat if you wanted to check it out.
Yeah.
You know, if you just approach it in a very casual, matter-of-fact way, we are not selling snake oil. We're just literally selling, you know, help.
Right. Yeah. Give us that number again. Okay? That's the last thing anybody's going to want to jot down or hear from this interview. Let them know where they need to call.
Yes, sir. So the Alta Point Access to Care number, again, is 251-450-2211. Or the Alta Point Crisis Center, which is where my office is 662-8000. If you call the 662-8000 and just say, I would like to be connected to the Veteran Services or to Ron Olmsted or to the veteran team, they'll know how to get a hold of me. And that's a great first start, first step.
Ron, pleasure getting to know you this morning. Hopefully we'll get you back on soon. I'm sure we have plenty more to discuss, but thank you so much for coming on with us on Mobile Mornings.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
All right, that does it for Mobile Mornings today. Coming up next, we'll have the Jeff Poor Show, and we'll be back after it. And that text line's still open, 251-343-0106. And more Mobile Mornings coming to you tomorrow.